Additional Encore audio archive recordings are available at www.12steptapes.com. We request you not upload this recording to the major free outlets. We are happy to allow free listening on our own site with a subscription service. Contact us on www.12steptapes.com for more information.
I'm going to time myself because I'll talk all night, as a lot of y'all in this room know. There we go. Hey, I'm Bryson. I start the same way every time because Al-Anons get freaked out. Although I look like it and sometimes act like it, I'm not an alcoholic. But I do describe myself as a low-bottom Al-Anon. So I think that's why I get invited to these things. I like to thank everybody who puts this thing on. Thank you all for being here and helping. It's pretty amazing getting to speak at an Al-Anon convention because, like, you have never had better hosts. Like, everything is planned out. It's pretty great. But it's pretty good. But and I want to thank my friend Robert for being here. I have to say this carefully. I was the officiant at Robert's wedding and Lauren's. Usually when I'm at home, I just go, you know, I married Robert, and people don't, it means a whole other thing. My home group's in Hollywood. It's, could mean, choose your own adventure. But I got in, and I was just like shot down the 10 in a cannon is how I felt, and I did work calls all the way here. And then I got here, and I was like, man, I probably should have centered myself for a minute. Maybe I should have, you know, a self-care thing should have taken a second and came in, and I reached out. I do what I always do. I picked up the phone. I reached out. I text Robert. It's like, hey, man, I sat down. I read this little program thing, which is extensive and amazing. Seriously, not joking. And I read Lisa's intro, who I hope, Lisa Emma, I haven't met you yet. And it really showed me how hard it can be of service, you know. And also, like, just the fact that people keep it going. And then Robert pointed out this back page of all the past chairmen and committees. And it's like there's a lot of people that aren't here. There's a lot of years this has been going on, and just that through line. And we sat out in that lobby and we talked about, like, you know, in Hollywood there's a term that we use, a bunch of us who came in. We used to call ourselves the Lonely Guy Volvo Club because we all drove old Volvos when we came in the room. Not because they were cool. And then David Kay, I think, like, quoted, he started calling us wags, weird alone guys. And we were, so if y'all identify, just come see us later. But because we didn't know how to be in the world, man. We were just like these single guys. And my home group is in Hollywood, 10 a.m., Self-Worth, out in New Hampshire. And it's on Zoom. And it's an amazing group of people. So I just want to say, I have a shirt that says, quote, Mark G. Because our friend Mark G passed away about a year ago. And I'll talk a little bit more about him, but just walking through the halls and seeing people. You know, I'm a dude that I grew up down south. I don't put this accent on just to be cool, make people think I'm smart. And I didn't really fit in, as you might could imagine, being, you know, a young, sensitive dude in middle Arkansas. But it's so crazy I say that. Lisa, tomorrow night, Lisa's going to be, and Don is going to be speaking and tomorrow night, amazing. And we were talking about the fact that, like, Betty Ann, so it's all 818. Lisa said it's Val-Anon convention. So all the Valley is here, 818 is here. And then Don's from Arkansas. So I didn't think about that. It was really amazing. But I didn't fit in, and I don't think I ever felt like I belonged or fit in at all until I came in these rooms. And then just walking through the halls, man, how many people we saw, you know. And the men here, it's really great to see, you know, it's a big deal. if you see some rough looking dude in Al-Anon meeting, man, that guy's like, that dude is dangerous. That guy doesn't care. He came into an Al-Anon meeting and hung out long enough to like get it. That's a really amazing cat, you know? And you guys, it's really funny, you know, I see so many cats in here and so many people who said amazing stuff and that I remember. And that's what this was about, was, you know, and I so it's so weird that so many people aren't here with us, but we carry this thing on and we keep it going and it's here. If you're new, let me just start by apologizing because this is probably not going to make a lot of sense. And that's all right. Stick around, ask questions after. I wrote notes because I felt a little scattered. I probably won't read them, but I wrote them. And I was talking, and you know, and Robert said, "Oh, it's going to be fine." My wife said, "It's going to be fine." I said, "I know it's going to be fine, but I want to respect the convention. You know, I want to respect the fact that y'all came here and respect the program." And I'm not typically a respectful person. Let me just say that right now. I have to start by apologizing. So first off, the taper who's taping this, I swear to you, if this is so filthy that you don't want to release it, I will pay to have it edited. I promise. I have a lot of friends who do that. So seriously, like, I will give you my number. I say that because, so I'll tell you a story about that. So, when I came in, I joke about this. I joked that when I came into this Burbank meeting, like, you know, 22 something years ago, a little longer now, because that meeting was my first time in. You'll get my story kind of non-linearly. So let me give you this part of it right here. I came in the program in probably like 99, I think it was. And then I would go to one meeting a week. I read a little literature. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't, you know, really do any service or do any work. And this, you know, didn't work the steps. And I'll be damned, but the Al-Anon didn't work for me. I don't know. Y'all failed me. So y'all failed that one. And then, like, a couple years later, for me, my higher power, like, taps me on the shoulder or, like, the wind in my hair. And then it gets a little harder, a little rougher, and then eventually it's just a 2x4 on the back of my head. And so I got that 2x4 and was back in the rooms, and I was like, what's going on? And another thing about that was I came back and never had a good relationship with men. And there was a big old dude, John, and he was... seemed like he was a million years old. He was probably my age now, but I walked up and I almost winced when he walked up after the meeting, and I was like, this guy's gonna say some shaming stuff to me. And he said, "How you been? Good to see you." And I was like, "I'm good, but not good enough." And he said, "Well, good to see you, man. Keep coming back." And he shook my hand. And he never said, "Where you been? What's wrong with you? Why weren't you here?" None of that. And that cracked the door for me to stay. So if you hear something from me tonight, I don't speak for Al-Anon. I'm not a motivational speaker. Hopefully this makes you feel good, maybe make you laugh. We'll kick it off and wake this thing up. But don't think that I speak for Al-Anon. I'm far from perfect. It's like they say, you know, dating in the rooms, right? The odds are good, but the goods are odd. So we both met our spouses in the rooms, by the way. So let me just say that right now. So anyway, a vision for you. But about that. So my story gets a little crazy sometimes, and so. So I was, I'll tell a couple stories about speaking, and I was out in the valley at the San Fernando Valley Convention a few years ago, and I went with a buddy of mine. It was like 9 o'clock, Friday night, 9 o'clock, at an AA convention, and I'm the Al-Anon speaker. So I roll in, and all my crazy AA friends are there, right, because I'm an Al-Anon, so it means that everybody that I knew that lived is now sober or in some program, so they're all there. I roll in, and I'm like, all right, we're going to wind it up, because these people are not an Al-Anon, so I'm like, let's make it happen. And then there's the usual also, like, the Al-Anon crowd, which includes some polite, like, elderly ladies and stuff, and then, so they cart me out and wind me up, and I'm like, whoa, okay, there's a Starbucks in the lobby, let's go. So I'm on it. And man, my friends are egging me on, and I'm just, it was filthy. Every other word was a cuss word, and it was just just out of my mind, super fun, hopefully spiritual. Everybody seemed to like it. At the end, one of the nightmares of doing this, if you're like a person who suffers, you know, from the effects of alcoholism, is people come up and tell you that you did great and they like you and they're, hey, how cool. So sitting through the receiving line, I used to not be able to do it. I'll tell you this story. I used to, when people would say, that was great, I'd go, no. And because it felt like an ice pick between my eyes if you said, that was great. Thank you. Thank you for doing this. That was so nice. Thank you. I couldn't hear it. And I would say, no. And my sponsor pointed out, that's arrogance for you to do that. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, you don't tell that person what to think. That person thinks whatever they think. Your job is to just listen and say thank you. And so for a while, I could look down and shut my mouth. And then gradually, now I can receive it. My wife went with me to one of these, and I was like the luncheon speaker, and there were like 700 people in the room, and we spoke, and she hadn't been to a convention with me, and I was like, okay, now we're gonna sneak out. And so we snuck around the side to get out before everybody came through, and we realized we were trapped in the hallway, and all 700 people came by, and we're like, thank you. And then we finished, and she's like, I have to go take a nap. And I was like, yeah, like that's the deal. So anyway, Friday night, Woodland Hills, I'm ripping it up with my crazy AA friends, and I figured, ah, it's cool. These people like did a bunch of drugs and alcohol. They can handle this. Then at the end, and I did one of my favorite, like, and I, by the way, I don't, now it's like one of my favorite stories, but I said that, speaking of being of service to these things, as y'all well know, I maintain that the most like terrifying thing in the world and would be the greatest like heavy metal punk rock band name would be Al-Anon Business Meeting. Because if you know how insanely aggressive that can get, that shit is on fire. And so I said, yeah, man, you know, I see a kid at the club, and you go, oh, you're an agnostic front. That's adorable. I'm an Al-Anon business meeting. And he was terrified. So anyway, like I said, I'm with my buddy Craig, who's just amazing. He's just one of those hard-ass AAs, which I love. He's an Al-Anon, too. So anyway, we were laughing. But at the end of it, I'm sitting in the line, and a lady comes up, super nice, and she was like, hey, I loved your pitch, but I gotta say, your language was hard to take, and you know, maybe some people would come in and think this was what Al-Anon is and just leave. At first, if y'all see me and think this is what Al-Anon is, like, I feel bad for you. But I get it, and I was like, oh. And of course, being an Al-Anon, I had ruined the world. I had blown the convention. Everybody was gonna just go out and like call their old ex, drunk ex or whatever. I had all the power in the world to destroy your lives. Y'all were moving back in with your alcoholic parents. It was over. But I legit was walking out of that place, and I was like, I told my friend, I was like, that lady wasn't wrong, but she had no idea that was going to haunt me for like the next month. And so I was walking out, and as I was walking out, this girl comes up, she goes, hey, and she comes up, and she's wearing like a full-on crazy punk rock shirt. She's all in black, her hair's black, and she's like, yo, I gotta tell you, I can't believe that you mentioned Agnostic Front. And I started laughing, and she's like, no. She goes, I go to these meetings all the time, and I just feel like nobody, like I don't relate, like I'm not part of this thing. And she said, for that 1 minute, she's like, I absolutely got it. And she's like, I felt like I was in a room with my friends. And so I was like, fuck it. All right. Fuck it. This is why I'm here. Sorry. But really, like, sometimes the people that need recovery, we don't reach out to them, you know? And so I love it. I will say that this is really cool. I travel around, and man, like a lot of places I go, it's like a bunch of old white people, and it bums me out because everybody needs recovery. So I want to say that, like, it's a beautiful thing. I came in, and I felt weird because I was male, It's like the weirdest thing for a straight, white, middle-aged man to feel, but I felt weird about it. And so I want to know, to tell you that, like, everybody here, your family, this is us. So, and people being a service and keeping this thing going is what happens. So this thing is whatever we make it. Your recovery is whatever your recovery is, right? And so, you know, I just want to say thank you all, because you've become my family, you know? And you gave me back my family, you know? I have a really great relationship with my dad. And, man, I checked out on that relationship for a lot of years. Hang on a second. Oh, good. My timer was hiding from me. But, all right. So, anyway, that was that. I'll tell a little bit of my story. A lot of y'all know it. I won't stay on it. I don't really want to stay on the mess. The mess was hard. 35 years of my life before I came into this program. And, you know, I'm jealous of Alateens, the ones that get it and don't just hang out and smoke. But I see y'all. So I grew up down south. And shame. So that big, tall, old dude, John, coming up to me, I was ready for shame, because that's what I had experienced. My friend Mark G, he had this concept of that he was a fear addict. And we, you know, if you read Understanding Ourselves, that is my jam, man, Understanding Ourselves. If you like read that and read all those characteristics, it's amazing. Because I kind of believe that I I'm not an alcoholic, but I am definitely affected by disease of alcoholism. It has affected me. And if you go through that, the obsession, anxiety, anger, all those things, if you read Understanding Alcoholism, you start to realize that's all that same stuff. It's all the disease of alcoholism. And so, Mark, I remember I met him, you know, like 20 years ago, and he was in this room in Hollywood. He was a giant dude. He looked like he should be just whipping my ass in a bar. He's like a big look. It looked like a big skinhead dude, honestly. And he was just the most gentle, amazing, beautiful human maybe I ever met. And he said that he was addicted to fear. He liked it because it was cheap to manufacture and readily available. That's true, man. It's true. And at the bottom of it. And he got sick, and he passed away pretty quick. So I didn't go see him, because I didn't want to like interfere with the family and stuff. And typical Al-Anon stuff too. I didn't feel that close to him, you know. And I'd been friends with him for years. And I always tell people that I wouldn't call him unless it was real. But when a big life thing would happen, I would call him, because I was like, I don't want to waste it. And I know he's helping a lot of people. But I would call him when things got really crazy. And so I didn't go down to see him. And then I got a call. It was Monday. I was at work. I got a call, and they said, hey man, you should come see Mark. And I was like, okay, cool. And that day it worked out that I could get away at lunch, and I drove over to the hospital and he was in there. And I went in and I was like, okay, I'm just gonna go hang out, you know. And I walked into the waiting room, and there were a few family members there. His family was out of state, but it was like 9 or 10 people from program. And there was someone who was his healthcare advocate, and she was a girl from program that had healthcare experience. And there were people that kept everybody up to date. And so I got all my information, you know, from Andy B, and everybody would check in and text chats and stuff. And there's people surrounded him. And so I showed up to see my friend, and they said, hey, the girl came in and she said, we need to all come into the room. And we went into the room, and they had made the decision to let him go. And so one of my fears was that I was going to live this life alone, that I was always going to be that kid who didn't fit in, that person who sat weird alone guy. And And that was, you know, that was my identity, that I would never be able to give or receive love. And so we went in that room. I think there were 12 people that surrounded him and put our hands on him. And his wife played beautiful music for him and looked in his eyes and told him it was okay. And it was all right. And I got to see what a life in recovery can end like, and how you can be loved by people that probably don't even know your last name. Don't need to. It's not a requirement. There is no requirement for love in these rooms. Unconditional. So, as usual, being a good Al-Anon, I am resentful at Mark because he didn't live long enough for me to have an argument with him. Because shortly after, the fear addict hit me and I started looking at things. I like to run my fears down all the way. You know, you're going to die alone. No, you're not. You're going to die surrounded by your friends. But at the bottom of all my fears is shame. It's all shame. I'm afraid of being shamed. My business will fail. Am I afraid for my employees? No. I'm afraid of the shame I will feel for having failed. They're going to be fine. They got a higher power. Everybody's going to be all right. Am I afraid of anything when I get to the bottom? It's all shame, and it's all mostly being shunned and not belonging. And Al-Anon is my hedge on that bet. Y'all have never thrown me out. When I cuss at the podium, when I show up late, when I make the world's worst coffee, when I have a lot of weird new guy ideas at the business meeting, as Robert and I, both new guy with a lot of ideas, y'all know that? New guy with a lot of ideas. We bonded over that. But, and I got to see that if you just show up and do this stuff and make the coffee and be the host and text people so they know where the hotel is, even though I didn't write it down and I didn't get us here to the right hotel. But we almost showed up into like a full Toddlers and Tiaras beauty pageant, which would have been amazing. Pretty great. Pretty awesome. We should have gone up to the registration desk for them and been like, what's the event going on here? And they'll be like, why? I'll be like, because I need to call my parole officer and make sure that's okay. By the way, some of y'all, I don't know if y'all are alcoholics, but some of you hard-looking motherfuckers look like y'all are alcoholics too. So I'm going to call it out. I have seen and signed an Al-Anon court card, and that is some deep Al-Anon right there. Al-Anon court-mandated Al-Anon. Yeah. Yeah. I just was like, respect. I have respect for you. I asked them, I was like, is this an AA card? And I should be signing. They're like, no, man, this is, I'm supposed to be here. I'm like, wow. I love that, man. But yeah, I always tell people, it's like, yeah, like low bottom Al-Anon, I was a mean sober. Like if you're drunk and you're making amends, you can be like, I was really messed up. Being an Al-Anon is horrible because I was an asshole. I was dead sober. I was planning it. I was manipulative at a level that required sobriety to pull these plans off. Like Wile E. Coyote level stuff. That's the deal, man. But that is the depths of how alcoholism affected me. I'm terrified that it's not going to work out, so I better have a plan, and I got to work that plan because there is no God, there is only me, and I'm running it, you know. And so, so going back from the South, we don't have alcoholism, but we have a lot of drunks, and so So I had some drunks in my family. I also had some Al-Anons in my family. Some admitted it. Some who, you know, just their sobriety bothered me. I don't know if you say it, however you want to say it. Their Al-Anonism bothered me. And I think that probably some of my relatives, I can tell, were dry because their behavior, although I wasn't an adult, knowing the stories, it's like, yeah, that sounds really familiar. Like, and so for me, I tell people, I don't know how this got in me. I view it like an infection. If I had an infection, or if I didn't know what was wrong with me and they gave me antibiotics, you'd be like, well, if you're better, you may have had an infection. And that's the way it is for me. I came into the rooms, you get a sponsor, work the steps, go to meetings, be of service, and your life works, probably alcoholism, you know? And so, I've spoken to, you know, relatives now, and there were some alcoholics around. Really, there was a lot of inconsistency. And regardless of what the isms are, for me, that inconsistency, my wife talks about that so much in that childhood of not knowing. And so I needed to know. And I was going to make it work, and I was going to make sure it happened and keep everything going. As I got older, I was attracted to the bird with the broken wing. I was always looking for the lower companion. And I realized that, like, if you have, you know, alcoholics attract a lot of attention, which is awesome, because then people are not paying attention to you. And you're always going to seem more together if you're dating the junkie. So, by the way, for those of you all out there dating, I'll just let you know, like, if you get to choose between dating someone on speed and the junkie, I'll take the junkie every day. They're slower. They're much easier to manage. Alcoholics, who knows? Alcoholics is a wild card. Anything could happen. A junkie, you could leave them in 5 or 6 hours. You come back and they're probably still there. So it's a little life tip for you if you're still in the disease. It's okay. But so anyway, I fear, anxiety, all of that, right? All of the things. But nobody, and this is why I'm so adamant about recovery and about spreading the message and just being out there and being available, that reach out a hand. Because where I come from, there were no meetings. There's a couple of 12-step meetings a week in this tiny town of 7,000 people. And it's just kind of one way to do it, and it's really rough. It's gotten better, and we're doing better. And the pandemic, one of the weird gifts is that there are hybrid and Zoom meetings. People hate those meetings out here sometimes, but you got to remember, if you're living in a town of 5,000 people and you're an hour and a half from a big town, you desperately need that. So those of you who do Zoom service, appreciate it. Seriously. It would be really easy for me to sit at my... 100-person home group probably every week and hang out and feel that love and get to listen to amazing people tell me their stories and share their lives with me. But I got to say that, like I said, I have a lot of friends back home that could use this. And I never got, no one said anything to me about it. And so y'all know the story, because my story is y'all's story. It just kept getting worse. The string of relationships... You know, I was good for about 3 months. Anybody can fake it for 3 months and keep it together. And then, like, the wheels came off. And I ain't going to get into it now, but, like, I used to, you know, tell, you know, funny stories about my relationships. But about halfway through my recovery career, I was like, oh, and by the way, I was the problem. Right? Don't think that the alcoholic addicts were the problem. Like, it was definitely a two-party dance team. And I was hoofing it. To this day, my wife is a double winner, so it's a fair fight. But she's a sober alcoholic and many years in Al-Anon. And I am by far the way more problematic in our relationship. And correct, she's there for, that's what she's here. If y'all just want to watch down front, if you see the hand come up, you know I'm telling the truth. But she'll be doing a 5-minute rebuttal after this, by the way. Taking questions, Q&A. But man, Apple is wrecking me on this timer. Hold on a minute, I got it. They're just showing me the wrong timer. So anyway, I finally achieved the Olympic gold medal of unavailability. I went out to the desert east of here with my gay sober friend, and she and I hung out for a weekend, and we came home. She was not acting gay. She was no longer sober, and we were clearly no longer friends. And that set off a crazy blender. That whole thing, she'd been sober for 8 years. And so, okay, in the literature, it says, learn more about alcoholism, right? It says that. You should get that, like, as a senior in high school. Like, learn more about alcoholism. I were hanging out, and I don't really drink much. I'm a lightweight. I weigh like 140 pounds wet, and so I was drinking this night. I used to drink one night a year, and I was drinking, and she's like, oh, that tequila looks good. And I was like, I'll buy you a shot. And she said, okay. And I bought her a shot. I lit the fuse on my own bomb. And I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know how horrible that was. I didn't know what a bad idea that was. And that set off a pattern of like what ended up being a couple of years of on and off just craziness. But after about 6 weeks, she came to me. And by the way, that whole thing about like your disease is doing push-ups while you're in recovery, and then when you go out, it's right back where you were. I saw it. It was like a chainsaw turning on, and just everything was crazy all of a sudden. But about 6 weeks in, she was like, you're scaring me. You're freaking me out. And she was right. I was really out of control. And so so I knew where to go, because I knew that meeting, the Little White Chapel in Burbank on Tuesday nights. And I went back in there with my tail between my legs, and I listened, and they still sounded the same. They sounded like they knew what was going on, and they were nice to me, and they hugged me. And then John didn't shame me. He left that door open. And this time I got a sponsor, and I worked steps and started going to meetings and being of service and doing those things that you do, and it started to change me. You know, they say the program worked me, and that was it. I'm a smart guy. I figure things out for a living, and I have no idea how this works. I do not understand it at all. It's fascinating to me. You know, so for me, powerless, you know, I wasn't ready to admit powerlessness, but unmanageability, I could not. That's where y'all got me. Okay. But the second half of the first step is the thing that got me. It's like, okay, yeah, some shit's unmanageable. All right, maybe I'm powerless over it. That got me. The second one was, you know, came to believe. I grew up down south. I had a Sunday morning God who could not hang out with me on Saturday night. So... God was not cruising the Walmart parking lot with me on Saturday night. So I didn't have a 24/7 God, you know. I grew up with a vengeful God that wanted to kill me. God loves you and wants to kill you, and that was not a message that I could get with. And so when I was a teenager, I just turned away. And so talking about that earlier about like me scared, like you talk about fear. And you hate yourself. You think you don't know anything, but then you think that you're in control of everything and you have to manage everything. No wonder I was terrified. No wonder I had anxiety. I'm in charge. Jesus, I don't know what I'm doing. And so that's how I lived my life from probably 14 till 35. It's a weird 20 years in there. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we, you know, understood. For me, the care is what came out. Care. Turning my will over. People are, I'm not turning my will over. Don't even worry about your will. Your will's probably a pretty bad idea. I've seen your will, bro. Got you here Friday night with me. But basically for me it was like the idea that could care. And so, you know, so the insanity of the second step, come to believe. Okay, yeah, I'm insane. Okay, something's something, not me, could maybe fix it. All right, I'm going to try this. I turn my will over, just see if I don't try to manipulate everything and I just show up. What if I don't know how long I'm going to share? Maybe it's going to be all right. Maybe I'm just supposed to show up and be horrible so y'all have something to talk about all weekend. It could be good. I'm just here to make Betty Ann and Don and Lisa look good. Maybe that's it. But that humility, which if you're not scared of shame and you're not, you know, you're not worried about being shunned and you know that you're loved, you can just show up and do it. You can just get up here and be like, all right, see what comes out. So for me, that piece of that, and then to find a loving higher power. You know, I had to find a higher power that was so big I couldn't comprehend it. I don't know, I can't exactly tell you in detail how my higher power works. Because for me, I needed something gigantic. And I love the poets Beavis and Butthead. There was a great episode where they have a guy and he says he's God. And they ask him this giant God-sized question about some horrible thing. Why does this horrible thing happen in the world? And the guy just goes, it's a little over your head. And I think that's one of the most profound statements about God that I've ever heard in my life in a cartoon. And I was just like, yeah, that's it. It's a little over my head. But all I know is when I do this, it works, right? Inventory, I say the same thing for anybody in here who's not done inventory. The thing that, you know, somebody said to me one time, they were like, oh, I don't want to open that closet. All that stuff's going to fall out on top of me. And I say it every time. It's not a closet. It's a backpack. It's on your back right now. You're carrying it around. It's already on you. It's not going to crush you. You've walked with it for years. Drop it. Take it out. Get it out of there. I talked about weird alone guy. I talked about not trusting and feeling close to men. For me, you know, for me, I was not able to have a relationship with a woman until I became intimate with men. And that's why men in Al-Anon mean so much to me. You know, that's the thing that, you know, Robert and I and all the guys in our crew, we share our lives together, everything. And that allows us to be better men and allows us, you know, to actually show up to relationships in a much better shape. So for me, having a sponsor and doing that fifth step was profound. Because again, here's everything. Here's the inventory. First off, someone who says, okay, that's a good list of all the bad, horrible stuff. We get it. What about the good stuff? What about the other side of this? Who are you? Right? And then to lay all that out and be like, is this everything? Yeah, this, I think this is it. By the way, it's not it, but the first time, it's not it, but just go with it. We just let you go with it. It's okay. It keeps going. But to have somebody then after all that just say, this is good work. I love you. I love you, man. You did a great job. It's just makes you bulletproof. I got recorded in 2004, I think, something like that, accidentally. That's how I get invited to these things. I recorded myself for a friend and got put on the internet. People were like, that guy's weird. And and in that, though, I had this moment of, like, freedom from my inventory, and I just said, you got nothing on me. And it was the most beautiful thing you could say. You got nothing on me. And what it really meant was that the world has nothing on me because y'all love me unconditionally. I show up that Friday night meeting. They didn't know me. Nobody had any idea how cool I was. They didn't know my last name. They didn't know anything about me. And they loved me, and they wanted to give me a hug. And I learned to accept those hugs and give them back. And I learned to show up for other people. And it was a beautiful thing. And changed my life. Getting a little short on time, so... I want to address the topic. But being the cranky Al-Anon that I am, I can't just address don't stop believing. It's just too positive. We're all here. Hopefully, y'all understand faith. Don't stop believing. Don't give up your faith. no matter how dark it is, no matter how impossible it is. I've been through some impossible things. My mother's having health challenge. She suffers from dementia, and she's no longer the person that she was. And I walked through some things I just had no idea I would be able to walk through. And every minute of every hour during those days when I was in the thick of a recent crisis, I had someone on my phone. Someone was texting me. I was texting them. I was talking to them, and I got through it. Never once did I stop believing in my higher power, in the power of these rooms, in the people that showed up for me that I don't even know. But that all said, I was like, maybe we should stop believing some of the crazy shit we thought about ourselves when we were kids. Some of the things we learned. The darkest goth thing in the world is understanding ourselves unwanted, unloved, and alone. Like, Trent Reznor couldn't have written that. It's dark. So for me, it's like maybe I need to stop believing that. I recently, so my wife did a bunch of work on core beliefs about herself. Several years ago, keep the timeline in mind. And she had huge recovery from it. And she learned so much about herself, and it was fascinating to watch. She wrote more than I've probably written in my life. And she got great relief from it. And I, like a good husband, did nothing with that information. I lived in a house with her for 5 or 6 years, and just like, well, that's awesome that you did that, honey. And to her credit and this program, she didn't say shit about it. Maybe a gentle suggestion now and then. But eventually I got there, and I uncovered a huge belief about myself and my relationship with money. Asking for things is shameful. Asking for money is shameful. Asking for anything is shameful. That's a belief that I've carried since I was a child. And in these rooms, I learned to not be scared of inventory, not be scared to go back and look and see what happened, to understand that more will be revealed. And that belief, and I'm like, ah. We saw our friend Liz out in the hall. We were talking about this, and I said, yeah, I think after you've been through the steps a bit and been around these rooms a little bit, it's like character defect. It's like, yeah, I don't know if that's a character defect. I don't know, but I know that that's an incorrect belief that I believed my whole life, and it kept me from receiving. Do I believe I'm worthy of love? No. No, I did not. When I came in these rooms, y'all taught me to be loved and to love. I did not believe that. That's an incorrect belief. Stop believing it. We talk about changing attitudes. And I was like, oh man, I was doing the old school AA thing before this. And I was like, let me go look up what attitudes means. And I looked up the definition of attitude. And it was like a settled way of thinking or feeling about someone or something. We change our attitudes in our literature, right? We change our attitudes. So for me, it's like, yeah, thank y'all for the theme, because for me, it's like, yeah, I have to stop believing all those lies that the disease of alcoholism put in me, that alcoholics put in me, the ideas as a kid that I made up because I didn't understand that people were affected with the disease and it was not about me. I thought I was unworthy of love. I thought I was unwanted, unloved, alone. Those were people. My wife also says, probably the most profound thing I've ever heard in my life, she believes that alcoholism blocks our ability to give and receive love. Receiving was nearly impossible for me. I could not do it. I did not know how to receive love. And I didn't believe I was worthy of love. So years ago, when Weird Alone Guy in Hollywood was walking around on my cell phone talking to my buddy, Tom. I don't know, man. I don't know. Who do you want to go out with? I don't know, man. I don't know. What kind of girl do you want? I want a girl like Anna Lee. Well, why don't you ask Anna Lee out? I'm not good enough. She'll never talk to me. She probably, you know, who? She's probably got a boyfriend. All these lies, all these things that weren't true, that I was terrified to find out. So, we got married a couple years after that. So maybe don't stop believing in your higher power. Maybe don't stop believing in this program. Don't stop having faith. But maybe take a look at some of that dumb shit that's in your head that's not true. You are all beautiful, perfect children of God. You have saved my life, given me a life I could never have dreamed of, given me a life that because of my beliefs, I wouldn't have dreamed of. Third step, I had no idea. My higher power had a way better idea for me. What was good, what I deserved, what I should have. Thank you very much. I love you all. Thank you. Oh,